See, someone's already left. She's afraid to sing. Did Loudon do any singing with you yesterday? Those of you who went, yes? Yeah, okay. So, I mean, I sat with Alauddin. I mean, this is where I learned to appreciate that many of us have this, I'm afraid to sing. So the instructions are very simple. We'll just sing a note together, just to open our hearts together. And the instructions are to just open your mouth. Open your mouth when we sing. You know, don't be afraid to just really open your mouth and allow the sound to come out, allow the breath to come out. And a lot of us in our lives think that if we crunch up our foreheads, it helps, you know, it makes the sound. So see if you can do this with a relaxed forehead. So really, a relaxed face, mouth open. We'll just sing this note. And we'll sing it on the tone saw. No, and just open throat, open mouth. Saw. Very good. Saw. Let's listen to the sound. Listen to the tone. Join in. Body, what this feels like, just feeling the sensation in the body. So this is a kind of embodiment. Sound is actually waves, the vibrations, of course, but our bodies are resonating cavities that resonate the sound. Each of us has a unique voice. Only the voice that in the same, our unique presence, our unique voice. Okay, we'll sing this one. Thy light is in all forms, thy love in all beings. Hu Allah, hu Allah, hu Allah, hu. Thy light is in all forms, thy love in all beings. Hu Allah, hu Allah, hu Allah, hu. Thy light is in all forms, thy love in all beings. Thy light Thy love in all beings. Hu Allah, hu Allah, hu Allah. Thy light is Thy love in all beings. Ooh, Allah, ooh, Allah, ooh, Allah, ooh. Thy light is in all forms. Thy love in all beings. Thy light is in all forms. Thy love in all beings. Ooh, Allah, ooh, Allah, ooh, Allah. Just the women. Thy love in all beings, thy light is in all forms, thy love in all beings. Ooh, Allah, ooh, Allah, ooh, Allah, all together. Thy love. don't worry about saving these songs. And if our instruments break, it does not matter. We have fallen into the place where everything is music. The strumming and the flute notes rise into the atmosphere, and even if the whole world's harp should burn up, there will still be hidden instruments playing. So the candle flickers and goes out. We have a piece of flint and a spark. This singing art is sea foam. The graceful movements come from a pearl somewhere in the ocean floor. Poems reach up like spindrift and the edge of driftwood along the beach, wanting. They derive from a slow and powerful root that we can't see. Stop the words now. Open the window in the center of your chest and let the spirits fly in and out. Don't worry about saving these songs. We have fallen into the place where everything is music. With the music. One of the practices that Sufis all over the world do, whether silently or aloud, is the zikr. And the chistis like to sing the zikr. The chistis like music. This person likes music. And the zikr really, the meaning of the zikr really is remembrance. To remember. The words are La ilaha il Allah, La ilaha il Allahu. In one way, it's really untranslatable. Just the sound. Another way to say is, there's lots of ways to say it, but it's still really rather untranslatable, but all of this is the creation. All of this is God. Nothing exists but this. Just this. Just this. A death and resurrection with each breath. Only this. La ilaha il Allahu. And after we do the zikr, we'll just go into the silence for a little bit, for some period of time, I don't know how long. La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah. dissolver of sugar, dissolve me if this is the time. Do it gently, with a touch of a hand or a look. Every morning I wait at dawn. That's when it's happened before. Or do it suddenly like an execution. How else can I get ready for death? You breathe without a body like a spark. You grieve and I begin to feel lighter. You keep me away with your arm, but the keeping away is pulling me in. We have lots more time. If you would like. So, does someone have a question or a comment? Is there something? Sometimes something comes alive when someone has a question, you know, that I don't know what the question might be. And so perhaps there's something that wants to be shared or said. Or not. Excuse me?
Would there be a chant that's short, that's quite repetitive?
Mm-hmm. I mean, shorter than what we've done.
Yes, maybe a word or two, where you just sing that over for those of us who don't manage very well.
Yeah.
And get lost along the way.
Huh. Allahu is a good one. Allahu. Yeah. So you just try it. Is that what you mean? I mean, just, yeah.
Something, how would you do that, I guess?
Well, we can make one up right here on the spot. How's that? Let's see what we can come up with. Because you want it with a melody, right, as compared to chanting. A song. Yeah.
Yes, like, sure. Something that is
simple.
Very simple.
Yes. Yeah, in the song, but yeah.
So if it's like a line or two, that
yeah. This is what we were singing, the first song. This is the last part of the first song. It's actually four notes. Does that work for you? Well, let's do it together. Let's help you remember this. So where do songs come from, you know? Yeah, from the heart.
And that's meaning?
God is here. Someone else? Something else to share or ask? Yes.
The words and phrases that we did in the beginning with the walking.
Yes.
It
is, yes, and it's would be Lessons on the Walk, and I'm not sure what publication it's in, I'm sorry, but take a look for it there, and if it's not here in the bookstore, there's it's published, it is published, yeah. And there's lots more, we just did a little sample of them, yeah. Yes. Could I say anything about Sam Lewis?
Yeah, I don't really know. You know, I've heard that he moved in various traditions.
Yes, let me speak to that. That's a very good. That's very appropriate. The question is, could I say something about Sam Lewis? He understood that Sam had moved in many different traditions. Yeah, this is very true. So Sam was born into a Jewish family, a very prominent Jewish family in San Francisco around the turn of the century, 1900, 1899. And from a young age was clearly marked as quite different. He's brilliant, mentally brilliant, learned to read very young, and his family expected him to be successful in business. Well, he was a mystic from the beginning. And wasn't even remotely interested. And I can't, you know, speak to all the different things that he did in his younger years, but he did about 1920, he met Hazrat Inayat Khan, who had come to the United States. He was the Sufi teacher I mentioned from India, and became his student. And at the same time, he became a student of Nogin Senzaki. I don't know if any of you know who Nogin Senzaki is, but he's a Japanese Buddhist. He was the first, considered really the first Buddhist teacher to come to this country. Nogin Senzaki worked, Zen, he's from Japan, worked as a menial laborer much of his younger years in this country. I think he was a doorman and a dishwasher. Whenever he would have enough money saved up, he would rent a hall and give a talk. And then he created a center in Los Angeles in the late 20s, I think, called the Mentor Garden. And that is where I think Sam sat with him and studied with him. So he was studying with Hazrat Inayat Khan and Nogin Senzaki at the same time. There's actually a lovely piece written about that Nogin Senzaki wrote about meeting Hazrat Inayat Khan, the meeting of these two men. They met at the Theosophy Library in San Francisco and went into Samadhi together. They sat in meditation together for a long time. That's all. Very simple. Getting back to Sam, he was really disinherited by his family, so he had to work to support himself. But there was a reconciliation with his family and some income in the 1950s, and he was able to travel. So he was able to go to Japan and to Egypt and Pakistan and India, several trips, spent many weeks or months at a time. And everywhere he went, he was recognized. For his presence, he was recognized as a teacher, whether it was a Zen master or, he asked to give talks in the Muslim communities in Egypt. He spent time with Papa Ram Dass at Ananda Ashram in Kerala in southern India. Someone else knows this story also. Hindu tradition. And everywhere he went, in these other countries, he was recognized. He was invited in. He was welcomed, and his realization was seen. And that didn't happen here. There were, it was the time. The time we live in is very different now than in the 50s and 40s. That was quite a reaction. Okay. What was I saying? Yeah. The times are different. Huh. It's interesting. But it wasn't until Sam was in his 60s that he was recognized here in this country, in his own home in San Francisco. And many young people at that time became his students. And he could have called this Buddhism. I mean, he could have taught them Zen, or, you know, sing Ram Nam, or do the Kalama, you know, sing the Zikr, and he shared all of that. What people know now, and most commonly known of his transmission, is the Dances of Universal Peace. But there was a lot more there, a lot more here, available from his teachings and what was transmitted to his students and what his students took with them. So he only had a few years where he was actively teaching with students in this country, maybe a handful of years. And he died in 1971. But obviously his work continued and has really flourished. And the dances, and he had 100 students. And this is in just a few days, is his Urs. The Urs to the Sufis is the celebration of the union of the teacher with the union of any of us with the beloved, which is the day that we die. And January 15th, so just a few days. And it will be 30 years this year, you know? Oh, another great friend. Yeah. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So some of us have continued, many of us have continued in this particular flavor that Hazrat Inayat Khan also knew, which was, there's a message of oneness in all of this. This doesn't belong to something called Sufism. This is reality. This is just a particular stream, a particular container. Yes, yes, you know this. Yeah, you all know this. We just remind each, you know, we sit down together and we remind each other of what we already know. So much to my surprise, I'd been sitting Vipassana meditation retreats 4 years ago. I was asked to co-lead this retreat as a Sufi. So this continues, you know. So this is...
To co-lead a Vipassana.
Yes, 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 yes. This is a wonderful blessing. I mean, I was shocked, but it doesn't... I mean, it's not about us, you know, and it's not about what we want or what we think we can do, you know. So this continues, this something bigger than a label, something bigger than an ism or a particular container, perhaps. It's very important for us to remember this, because the people that we are with, for most of us, the people that we are with in the world when we leave this conference don't all wear the same ism that we do, you know? And can we see deeply into their humanity and their knowing of this oneness? You know, it's not a secret. Oh. Yes, Anne. Yes. Oh dear, you're gonna make me ask. Yes, the question was, how did I meet Sam? Well, I have to say, I met him in a dream. Yeah. Several months after he died, I was living in Santa Barbara, and I went to up to San Francisco to visit with some friends, and they wanted me to meet these Sufi teachers, and they took me to something called the Whirling Dervish Bazaar in Sausalito. This is the old days. And with Vilayat, Pir Vilayat. And I don't remember anything about that. But there's a lot I don't remember from those days. And the next night, they dropped me off. They didn't come in with me. They dropped me off at the Mentor Garden, Sam's home in San Francisco, where he taught. He named the Mentor Garden. Yes, after Nogen Senzaki, you know, after his place. And it's a little house in Bernal Heights, and there's a meditation garage down below, and they converted that into a meditation hall. Some of you have been there. And I had no idea what I was getting myself in for. I mean, my friend said, you should do this, you know, you'll like it, you know. And I, well, to describe myself, oh my, then, I only wore blue jeans and flannel shirts and hiking boots, and I did everything myself, thank you very much, and I didn't need anything or anybody, and I was really a tough cookie. And so I walk into this meeting, and it's a dance meeting, and it's all, I think, all probably all of Sam's students. You know, I mean, I think I was the only new person. It was a small meeting, maybe 15 or 20 people. And we started to dance, and something happened, and it blew my mind. It just blew my mind. And the only time I'd experienced anything like that was, well, I was a child of the 60s, taking psychedelic drugs, which I'd done my share of. Boy, this is on tape, too. It was a long time ago. See, so I had finished with that. I had finished with that already. But there was something in those experiences that was very real and very alive. And I felt something that I didn't understand, and quite frankly, it terrified me. But I also was hooked. And that night, I went back to my friend's apartment, and I had a dream where I met Sam. And I knew it was him. And then I moved 1,000 miles away before I could do anything with what happened. I couldn't understand it. I couldn't live it. I wasn't ready, you know. But it didn't take long. I mean, a year later, it became the rest of my life. You know, sometimes that happens. My friend that I was teaching with last week, he described meeting his teacher, his Sufi teacher. He also was a practicing Buddhist. He said, I walked into the room. I saw all these people very well dressed. And I walked into the room, and this is what I said to myself. Oh, look at all these really well-dressed people. Gee, Buddhists don't dress like this. And this was in New York. He said, no, this looks like California. Oh, I'm never leaving. Yeah. So that's sometimes how that happens. Oh, I'm never leaving, you know. Yeah. So the reason I have to tell this is because the story didn't make sense to me for a long time. And I had other people in my life, in Sam's lineage, Sam's students, who were my teachers. You know, who were formerly my teachers. But there was always something else. And I didn't know that it was possible or real to have a teacher who you hadn't met in the physical body. I just didn't know. I mean, and maybe someone had told me, but I didn't know that. I just thought, you know, you had to have the flesh and blood, and it was very important, and I did have that. I did have all of that. I was given so much. But there was something else that was also true. And it was wonderful to come across the Naqshbandi tradition and the Golden Sufi group, because they understood this and they knew this. And I went, oh, well, I know this too, but I just didn't believe it. So we need help from each other sometimes. We need to remind each other of something. So perhaps, you know, that's why I needed to answer that question, which is very, really quite personal. And so, now it's on tape. So, perhaps that helps someone else here. Yes. Where is the Munajat in Chisti? Hazrat Nayak Khan was in the Chisti. Was it Chisti Sufi?
He was the
man who came from India. Yeah. You know Chisti? Yeah. Ah, you felt the presence of Munijin Chisti. Ah, alhamdulillah. Well, let me tell you a little about Hafiz, another great Sufi poet. I don't know, maybe, do you all know Hafiz? Huh? Some of you don't know Hafiz, huh? Well, a 14th century Sufi poet from Persia, from Shiraz. And a little different flavor than Rumi. And I think what one of the things I like about these renditions of Hafiz is they're very embodied, they're very present. There's a reflection of God right here, having rolls and coffee with us.